Chapter 7. A Goat Pen. The Gaeldanin sky was cloudless, the forested hills hammered by a fierce morning sun. Even short of midday the land sweltered. Pines and leatherleaf were yellowing in the drought, and others Perrin suspected also were evergreens. Not a whisper of air stirred. Sweat dripped down his face, ran into his short beard. His curly hair was matting on his head. He thought he heard thunder somewhere to the west, but he had almost stopped believing it would ever rain again. You hammered the iron that lay on your anvil, instead of daydreaming about working silver. From the vantage of his sparsely treed ridge, he studied the walled town of Bethal through a brass-bound looking-glass. Even his eyes could use help over this distance. It was a good-sized town of slate-roofed buildings with half a dozen tall stone structures that might have been minor nobles' palaces or the homes of well-to-do merchants. He could not make out the scarlet banner hanging limply atop the tallest tower of the largest palace, the only flag in sight, but he knew who it belonged to. Aleandra Maritha Kegarin, Queen of Gialdan, far from her capital in Jahanna. The town gates stood open, with a good 20 guards at each, yet no one came out, and the roads he could see were empty, except for a lone rider galloping hard toward Bethal from the north. The soldiers were on edge, shifting pikes or bows at sight of the horseman as though he waved a blood-dripping sword. More soldiers on watch crowded the wall towers or marched the walls between. Plenty of knocked arrows up there, too, and raised crossbows. Plenty of fear. A storm had swept over this part of Gialdan. It still did. The prophet's bands created chaos, bandits took advantage, and white cloaks, raiding across the border from Amadicia, might easily strike this far. A few scattered columns of smoke farther south probably marked burning farms. White cloak work or the prophet's. Bandits seldom bothered with burning, and the other two left little for them in any case. Adding to the jumble, rumor in every village he had passed the last few days said that Amador had fallen to the prophet or Terrabonners, or Aes Sedai, depending on who told the tale. Some claimed Pedron Nile himself was dead in the fighting to defend the city. All in all, reason enough for a queen to be concerned for her own safety. Or the soldiers could be down there because of him. Despite his best efforts, his passage south had hardly gone unnoticed. He scratched his beard, considering. A pity the wolves in the surrounding hills could not tell him anything, but they seldom paid heed to men's doings except to stay clear of them. And since Dumai's wells, he had not felt right in asking any more of them than he absolutely had to. It might be best, after all, if he rode in alone with just a few of the Two Rivers men. He often thought Fael could read his mind, usually when he least wanted her to, and she proved it now, heeling her night-black mare Swallow close to his dun. Her narrow-skirted riding dress was nearly as dark as the mare, yet she seemed to be taking the heat better than he. She smelled faintly of herbal soap and clean perspiration, of herself, of determination. Her tilted eyes were very determined, and with her bold nose she was very much her namesake falcon. "I would not like to see holes in that fine blue coat, husband," she said softly, for his ears alone. "And those fellows look as if they might just shoot at a group of strange men before asking who they are. Besides, how will you reach Aleandra without announcing your name to the world? This must be done quietly, remember?" She did not say that she should be the one to go, that the gate guards would take a woman alone for a refugee from the Troubles, that she could reach the queen using her mother's name without exciting too much comment, but she did not need to. He had had all that and more from her every night since entering Gialdan. He was here in part because of Aleandra's cautious letter to Rand, offering support, allegiance. Her desire for secrecy had been paramount in any case. Perrin doubted that even Aram, sitting his leggy gray a few paces behind them, could have heard a word Fael said. Yet before she finished speaking, Berlane brought her white mare up on his other side, sweat glistening on her cheeks. She also smelled determined, through a cloud of rose perfume. To him it seemed a cloud. For a wonder, her green riding dress showed no more flesh than it had to. Berlane's two companions stayed back, though Anura, her Aes Sedai advisor, studied him with an unreadable expression from beneath her cap of thin, shoulder-long beaded braids. Not him and the two women at his sides, him in particular. No sweat there. He wished he were close enough to smell the beak-nosed gray sister. Unlike the other Aes Sedai, she had made no promises to anyone. For whatever those promises were worth. Lord Gallien, commander of Berlane's winged guards, was seemingly busy examining Bethal through a looking-glass raised to his one eye, and fiddling with his reins in a way Perrin had come to know meant that he was deep in calculations, probably how to take Bethal by force. Gallien always saw the worst possibility first. "I still think I should be the one to approach Alejandra," Berlane said. This, too, Perrin had heard every day. "It is why I came, after all." That was one of the reasons. Anura will be granted an audience at once and take me in with none the wiser save Alejandra. A second wonder. There had not been a hint of flirtation in her voice. She seemed to be paying as much attention to smoothing her red leather gloves as to him. Which one? The trouble was, he did not want to choose either. Sionid, the second Aes Sedai who had come to the ridgeline, stood beside her bay gelding a little way off, near a tall, drought-withered blackwood, looking not at Bethal but the sky. The two pale-eyed wise ones with her made a sharp contrast, faces sun-dark to her pale complexion, fair-haired to her dark, tall to her short, not to mention their dark skirts and white blouses contrasting to her fine blue wool. Necklaces and bracelets of gold and silver and ivory draped Adara and Navarin, while Sionid wore only her great serpent ring. They were young to her ageless. The wise ones matched the green sister for self-possession, though. And they were studying the sky, too. "Do you see something?" Perrin asked, putting off the decision.
"We see the sky, Perrin Ebara," Adara said calmly, her jewelry making a soft clatter as she adjusted the dark shawl looped over her elbows.
The heat seemed to touch the Aiel as little as it did the Aes Sedai.
"If we saw more, we would tell you."
He hoped they would. He thought they would. At least, if it was something they believed Grady and Niald might see, too. The two Ashaman would not keep it secret. He wished they were there instead of back in the camp. More than half a week ago now, a lace of the One Power streaking high across the sky had created quite a stir among the Aes Sedai and Wise Ones. And with Grady and Niald. Which fact had made a bigger stir still, as close to panic as any Aes Sedai was likely to come. Ashaman, Aes Sedai, and Wise Ones all claimed they could still feel the power faintly in the air long after that bar of lace vanished, but nobody knew what it meant. Niald said it made him think of wind, though he could not tell why. No one would voice more of an opinion than that, yet if both the male and female halves of the power were visible, it had to be the Forsaken at work, and on a huge scale. Wondering what they were up to had kept Perrin awake late most nights since. In spite of himself, he glanced to the sky, and saw nothing, of course, except a pair of pigeons. Abruptly a hawk plummeted into his sight, and one of the pigeons was gone in a spray of feathers. The other winged on frantically toward Bethal.
"Have you reached a decision, Perrin Ebara?" Navarin asked, a touch sharply.
The green-eyed wise one appeared even younger than Adara, perhaps no older than he was, and she did not quite have the blue-eyed woman's serenity. Her shawl slid down her arms as she planted hands on hips, and he half expected her to shake a finger at him, or a fist. She reminded him of Nynaeve, though they surely looked nothing alike. Navarin would have made Nynaeve look plump.
"What use our advice if you will not listen?" she demanded. "What use?"
Fael and Berlane sat straight in their saddles, both as proud as they could be, both smelling expectant and uncertain at the same time, and irritated at being uncertain. Neither liked that one speck. Sionid was too far to send her scent, but compressed lips gave her mood well enough. Adara's command not to speak unless spoken to infuriated her. Still, she certainly wanted him to take the wise one's counsel. She stared at him intently, as though the pressure of her eyes could push him the way they wanted him to go.
In truth, he wanted to choose her, yet he hesitated. How far did her oath of fealty to Rand truly hold? Further than he would have believed by the evidence seen so far, but still, how far could he trust an Aes Sedai? The arrival of Seonid's two warders spared him for another few minutes. They rode up together, though they had gone out separately, keeping their horses well back into the trees along the ridgeline, so they would not be seen from the town. Furin was a Tyran, nearly as dark as good soil, with gray streaking his curly black hair, while Terrell, a Mirandian, was 20 years younger, with dark reddish hair, curled mustaches, and eyes bluer than Adara's, yet they were stamped from the same mold, tall and lean and hard. They dismounted smoothly, cloaks shifting colors and vanishing in a queasy-making way, and made their reports to Seonid, deliberately ignoring the wise ones. And Perrin.
"It's worse than back north," Furin said disgustedly. A few drops of sweat beaded on his forehead, but neither man appeared much affected by the heat. "The local nobles are shut up in their manors or the town, and the queen's soldiers keep inside the town walls. They've abandoned the countryside to the prophet's men." And the bandits, though those seem scarce around here. The prophet's people are all over. I think Alejandra will be happy to see you.
Rabble, Terrell snorted, slapping his reins on his palm. I never saw more than 15 or 20 in one place, armed with pitchforks and boar spears mainly. Ragged as beggars they were. Fit for scaring farmers, to be sure, but you'd think the lords would be rooting them out and hanging them in bunches.
The queen will kiss your hand to see a sister.
Seonid opened her mouth, then glanced up at Adara, who nodded. If anything, gaining permission to speak, tightened the green's mouth more. Her tone was mild as butter, though.
There is no more reason to put off your decision, Lord Ebara.
She emphasized that title a bit, knowing exactly how much right he had to it.
Your wife can claim a great house, and Berlane is a ruler. Yet Saldaean houses count little here, and Mayenne is the smallest of nations. An Aes Sedai for an emissary will put the weight of the White Tower behind you in Alejandra's eyes.
Perhaps recalling that Anura would do for that as well as she hurried on.
Besides, I have been in Gildan before, and my name is well known. Alejandra will not only receive me immediately, she will listen to what I say.
"Navarin and I will go with her," Adara said, and Navarin added, "We will make sure she says nothing she should not."
Seon had ground her teeth audibly to Perrin's ears, and busied herself smoothing her divided skirts, eyes carefully down. Anura made a sound, very nearly a grunt, and turned her head from the sight. She herself stayed away from the wise ones, and did not like seeing the other sisters with them. Perrin wanted to groan. Sending the green would lift him off a spike, yet the wise ones trusted Aes Sedai less than he did and kept Seonid and Missouri on short leashes. There had been tales about Aiel in the villages recently, too. None of those folk had ever seen an Aiel, but rumors about the Aiel following the dragon reborn drifted in the air. Half of Gildan was sure there were Aiel just a day or two away, and each story was stranger and more horrible than the last. Alejandra might be too frightened to let him near her once she saw a pair of Aiel women telling an Aes Sedai when to hop. And Seonid was hopping, however much she ground her teeth. Well, he was not about to risk Fael without more assurance of her greeting than a vaguely worded letter received months ago. That spike dug deeper, right between his shoulder blades, yet he had no choice at all. "A small party will get through those gates easier than a large," he said finally, stuffing the looking-glass into his saddlebags. It would set fewer tongues wagging as well. "That means just you and Anura, Berylaine. And maybe Lord Gallien. Likely they'll take him for Anura's warder." Berylaine chortled in delight, leaning to clasp his arm with both hands. She did not leave it at that, of course. Her fingers squeezed caressingly, and she flashed a heated smile of promise, then straightened before he could move, her face suddenly innocent as a babe's. Expressionless, Fael focused on pulling her gray riding gloves snug. By her scent, she had not noticed Berylaine's smile. She hid her disappointment well.
I'm sorry, Fael, he said, but...
Outrage flared in the smell of her like thorns. I am certain you have matters to discuss with the first before she goes, husband, she said calmly. Her tilted eyes were pure serenity, her scent sand burrs. Best you see to her now.
Pulling Swallow around, Fael walked the mare over to a plainly fuming Seonid and the tight-faced wise ones, but she did not dismount or speak to them. Instead, she frowned down at Bethal, a falcon staring from her eyrie.
Perrin realized he was feeling at his nose and pulled his hand down. There was no blood, of course. His nose only felt as if there should be. Berylaine needed no last-minute instructions. The first of Mayenne and her gray advisor were all impatience to be off, all certainty they knew what to say and do. Yet Perrin stressed caution anyway, and emphasized that Berylaine and only Berylaine was to speak with Aleandra. Anura gave him one of those cool Aes Sedai looks and nodded, which might have been agreement or might not. He doubted he could get more out of her with a pry bar. Berylaine's lips curled in amusement, though she agreed with everything he said. Or said she did. He suspected she would say anything to get what she wanted, and those smiles in all the wrong places bothered him. Gallien had put his looking-glass away, but he was still playing with his reins, no doubt calculating how to carve a way out of Bethal for the two women. Perrin wanted to growl. He watched them ride down to the road with worry. The message Berylaine carried was simple. Rand understood Aleandra's caution, but if she wanted his protection, she must be willing to announce support for him openly. That protection would come, soldiers and Ashaman to make it plain to everyone, and even Rand himself, if need be, once she agreed to make the announcement. Berylaine had no reason to change the message a hair, despite her smiles. He thought they might be another way of flirting. But Anura? Aes Sedai did what they did, and the light alone knew why half the time. He wished he knew some way to reach Aleandra without using a sister or rousing talk. Or risking Fael. The three riders reached the gates with Anura in the lead, and guards quickly raised pikes, lowered bows and crossbows, no doubt as soon as she named herself Aes Sedai. Not many people had the nerve to challenge that particular claim. There was barely a pause before she was leading the way into the town. In fact, the soldiers seemed eager to hurry them through, out of sight of anyone watching from the hills. Some peered at the distant heights, and Perrin did not need to smell them to sense their unease over who might be hidden up there, who might improbably have recognized a sister. Turning north toward their camp, Perrin led the way along the ridge until they were out of sight from Bethal's towers, then slanted down to the hard-packed road. Scattered farms lined the road, thatch-roofed houses and long, narrow barns, withered pastures and stubbled fields and high-walled stone goat pens. But there was little livestock to be seen and fewer people. Those few watched the riders warily, geese watching foxes, stopping chores where they stood until the horses passed on. Aram kept as close an eye on them in return, sometimes fingering the sword hilt rising above his shoulder, perhaps wishing to find more than farm folk. Despite his green-striped coat, little tinker remained in him. Idara and Navarin walked beside Stepper, seemingly out for a stroll, yet keeping pace easily despite their bulky skirts. Seonid heeled them on her gelding, Furin and Terrell at her own back. The pale-cheeked green pretended that she simply wanted to ride a careful two paces behind the wise ones, but the men scowled openly. Warders often had a greater care for their Aes Sedai's dignity than the sister did herself, and Aes Sedai had enough for queens. Fael kept Swallow on the far side of the Aiel women, riding in silence, apparently studying the drought-scarred landscape. Slim and graceful, she made Perrin feel a little clumsy at the best of times. She was quicksilver, and he loved it in her usually, but... A slight breath of air had begun to stir, enough to keep her scent mingled with the rest. He knew he should be thinking about Aleandra and what her answer would be, or better still, the prophet and how to find him once Aleandra replied. However she did, but he could not find room in his head. He had expected Fael to be angry when he chose Berylaine, for all that Rand supposedly had sent her for the purpose. Fael knew he did not want to send her into danger, into any risk of danger, a fact she disliked more than she did Berylane. Yet her scent had been soft as a summer morning, until he tried to apologize. Well, apologies usually stoked her anger, if she already was angry, except when they melted her temper anyway. But she had not been angry. Without Berylane, everything ran as smooth as silk satin between them, most of the time. But explanations that he did nothing to encourage the woman, far from it, earned only a curt, "Of course you don't," in tones that called him a fool for bringing it up. But she still grew angry, with him, every time Berylane smiled at him or found an excuse to touch him, no matter how brusquely he put her off, and the light knew he did that. Short of tying her up, he did not know what more he could do to discourage her. Ginger attempts to find out from Fail what he was doing wrong received a light, "Why do you think you've done anything?" Or a not-so-light, "What do you think you've done?" Or a flat, "I do not want to talk about it." He was doing something wrong, but he could not puzzle out what. He had to, though. Nothing was more important than Fail. Nothing. "Lord Perrin?" Aram's excited voice cut into his brown study. "Don't call me that," he muttered, following the direction of the man's pointing finger to yet another abandoned farm some distance ahead, where fire had taken the roof from house and barn. Only rough stone walls stood. An abandoned farm, but not deserted. Angry shouts rose up there. A dozen or more rough-clad fellows carrying spears and pitchforks were trying to force their way over the chest-high stone wall of a goat pen, while a handful of men within tried to keep them out. Several horses ran loose inside, frightened at the noise and dodging about, and there were three women mounted. They were not simply waiting to see how it would all turn out, though. One of the women appeared to be hurling rocks, and even as he looked, another dashed close to the wall to lash out with a long cudgel, while the third reared her horse and a tall fellow toppled back off the wall to get clear of flashing hooves. But there were too many attackers, too much wall to defend. "I advise you to ride wide," Sion had said. Edara and Navarin turned grim stares on her, but she plowed on, hurry overwhelming her matter-of-fact tone. "Those are surely the prophet's men, and killing his people is a bad way to begin. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands may die if you fail with him. Is it worth risking that to save a handful?" Perrin did not intend to kill anyone if he could help it, but he did not intend to look the other way, either. He wasted no time in explanations, though. "Can you frighten them?" he asked Adara. "Just frighten?" He remembered all too well what the Wise Ones had done at Demise Wells. And the Ashaman. Maybe as well Grady and Niald were not there. "Perhaps," Adara replied, studying the crowd around the pen. She half shook her head, shrugged a fraction. "Perhaps." That would have to be good enough. "Aram, Furin, Terrell," he snapped, "with me." He dug in his heels, and as Stepper leaped forward, he was relieved to see the warders following closely. Four men charging made a better show than two. He kept his hands on the reins, away from his axe. He was not so pleased when Fail galloped Swallow up alongside him. He opened his mouth, and she arched an eyebrow at him. Her black hair was beautiful, streaming in the wind of their rush. She was beautiful. An arched eyebrow? No more. He changed what he had been about to say. "Guard my back," he told her. Smiling, she produced a dagger from somewhere. With all the blade she carried hidden away, sometimes he wondered how he missed being stabbed just trying to hug her. As soon as she looked ahead again, he gestured frantically to Aram, trying to keep the motion where she could not see. Aram nodded, but he was leaning forward, sword bared, ready to skewer the first of the prophet's folk he reached. Perrin hoped the man understood he was to guard Fail's back, and the rest of her, if they actually came to grips with those fellows. None of the ruffians had noticed them yet. Perrin shouted, but they seemed not to hear over their own yelling. A man in a coat too big for him managed to scramble atop the wall, and two others appeared about to get over. If the Wise Ones were going to do anything, it was past. A thunderclap nearly over their heads almost deafened Perrin, a mountainous crack that made Stepper stumble before regaining his pace. The attackers certainly noticed that, staggering and looking around wildly, some clapping hands over their ears. The man on the wall overbalanced and fell off outside. He leaped up immediately, though,
angrily gesturing to the enclosure, and some of his companions leaped back at it. Others saw Perrin then, and pointed, their mouths working, but still no one ran. A few hefted weapons. Suddenly a horizontal wheel of fire appeared above the goat pen, as wide as a man was tall, flinging off sputtering tufts of flame as it spun with a moan that rose and fell, mournful groan to keening wail and back. The rough-clad men broke in every direction like scattering quail. For a moment longer, the man in a too-big coat waved his arms and shouted at them, then with one last glance at the fiery wheel, he too darted away. Perrin almost laughed. He would not have to kill anyone, and he would not have to worry about Fael getting a pitchfork through her ribs. Apparently the people in the pen were as frightened as those outside, one of them at least. The woman who had reared her horse at the attackers slipped open the gate and kicked her mount to an awkward gallop. Up the road, away from Perrin and the others.
"Wait!" Perrin shouted. "We won't harm you!"
Whether she heard or not, she kept whipping her reins. A bundle tied behind her saddle bounced wildly. Those men might be running as hard as they could now, but if she went off by herself, even two or three could do her injury. Lying flat on Stepper's neck, Perrin dug in his heels, and the dun shot forward like an arrow. He was a big man, yet Stepper had earned his name for more than prancing feet. Besides, by its lumbering run, the woman's mount was hardly fit for a saddle. With every stride, Stepper closed the gap, nearer, nearer, until Perrin was able to reach out and seize the other horse's bridle. Up close, her hammer-nosed bay was little better than crowbait, lathered and worn out more than the short run could account for. Slowly, he drew both horses to a halt.
"Forgive me if I frightened you, mistress," he said. "Truly, I mean you no harm."
For the second time that day, an apology did not get the response he expected. Angry blue eyes glared at him from a face surrounded by long red-gold curls, a face as regal as any queen's for all that it was plastered with sweat and dust. Her dress was plain wool, travel-stained, and as dusty as her cheeks, but her face was furious as well as queenly.
"I do not need," she began in chill tones, trying to jerk her horse free,
then cut off as another of the women, white-haired and bony, galloped up on a slab-sided brown mare in worse condition than the bay. They had been riding hard for some time, these folk. The older woman was just as worn and dust-covered as the younger. She alternated between beaming at Perrin and scowling at the woman whose bridle he still held.
"Thank you, my lord."
Her voice, thin but strong, gave a hitch as she noticed his eyes, but golden yellow eyes on a man slowed her only an instant. Not a woman fazed by much. She still carried the stout stick she had been using for a weapon.
"A most timely rescue. Megden, whatever were you thinking? You could have gotten yourself killed. And the rest of us, too. She's a headstrong girl, my lord. Always leaping before she looks. Remember, child, a fool abandons friends and gives up silver for shiny brass. We do thank you, my lord, and Megden will, too, when she comes to her senses."
Megden, a good 10 years older than Perrin, could only be called a girl in comparison to the older woman, but despite weary grimaces that matched her scent, frustration tinged with anger, she accepted the tirade, only pulling once more in a half-hearted attempt to free her horse, then giving up. Letting her hands rest on her cantle, she frowned at Perrin accusingly, then blinked. The yellow eyes again. Yet despite that strangeness, she still did not smell afraid. The old woman did, but Perrin did not think it was of him. Another of Megden's companions, an unshaven man mounted on yet another bedraggled horse, this a knob-kneed gray, approached while the old woman was talking, but kept back. He was tall as Perrin, if not nearly so wide, in a travel-worn dark coat with a sword belted over. Like the women, he had a bundle tied on behind his saddle. That tiny breeze swirled to bring Perrin his scent. He was not afraid, he was wary. And if the way he looked at Megden was any guide, it was she he was wary of. Maybe this was not so simple as rescuing travelers from a gang of ruffians after all.
"Perhaps you should all come to my camp," Perrin said, finally releasing the bridle. "You'll be safe from brigands there."
He half expected Megden to make a break for the nearest tree line, but she turned her horse with his back toward the goat pen. She smelled resigned. Even so, she said,
I thank you for the offer, but we must continue our journey. We will go on, Linny, she added firmly,
and the older woman frowned at her so sternly that he wondered whether they were mother and daughter despite her use of the woman's name. They certainly looked nothing alike. Linny was narrow-faced and parchment-skinned, all sinew, while Megden might be beautiful under that dust, if a man liked fair hair. Perrin glanced over his shoulder at the man trailing after, a hard-looking fellow in need of a razor. Perhaps he liked fair hair. Perhaps he liked it too much. Men had made trouble for themselves as well as others for that reason before this. Ahead, Fahil was sitting swallow and peering over the wall of the pen at the people inside. Perhaps one of them had been hurt. Saonid and the Wise Ones were nowhere in sight. Aram had understood, apparently. He was close to Fahil, though looking impatiently toward Perrin. The danger was clearly past, though. Before Perrin was halfway to the goat pen, Terrell appeared with a narrow-eyed, stubble-cheeked man stumbling along beside his roan, the collar of his coat gripped in the warder's fist.
I thought we should catch one of them, Terrell said with a hard grin. Always best to hear both sides. Whatever you thought you saw, my old Da always said.
Perrin was surprised. He had thought Terrell could not think beyond the end of his sword. Even hiked up as it was, the stubble-cheeked fellow's frayed coat was plainly too big for him. Perrin doubted anyone else had been able to see well enough at the distance, but he recognized that thrusting nose, too. This man had been the last to run, and he was not cowed now, either. His sneer took them all in.
"You're all in deep muck for this," he rasped. "We was doing the prophet's bidden, we was. The prophet says if a man bothers a woman as doesn't want him, he dies. This lot was chasing after her."
He jerked his chin at Megden.
"And she was running hard. The prophet'll have your ears for this."
He spat for emphasis.
"That is ridiculous," Megden announced in a clear voice. "These people are my friends. This man completely misunderstood what he saw."
Perrin nodded, and if she thought he was agreeing with her, all well and good. But putting what this fellow said alongside what Linny had, not simple at all. Fahil and the others joined them, followed by the rest of Megden's traveling companions, three more men, and another woman, all leading worn-down horses with few miles left in them. Not that they had been prime horse flesh in some years, if ever. A finer collection of buck knees, bow backs, spavins, and sway backs Perrin could not recall. As always, his gaze went first to Fahil. His nostrils strained for her scent, but Saonid snagged his eyes. Slumped in her saddle, flushing scarlet, she wore a sullen glower, and her face looked odd, her cheeks puffed out and her mouth not quite closed. There was something, a bit of red and blue. Perrin blinked. Unless he was seeing things, she had a wadded-up scarf stuffed into her mouth. Apparently, when wise ones told an apprentice to be quiet, even an Aes Sedai apprentice, they meant it. He was not the only one with sharp eyes. Megden's mouth fell open when she saw Saonid, and she gave him a long, considering look as if he were responsible for the scarf. So she knew an Aes Sedai on sight, did she? Uncommon for the countrywoman she appeared. She did not sound one, though. Furin, riding behind Saonid, wore a thunderhead for a face, but it was Terrell who made everything even less simple by tossing something to the ground.
I found this behind him, he said, where he might have dropped it, running.
At first, Perrin did not know what he was looking at, a long loop of rawhide thickly strung with what appeared to be tags of shriveled leather. Then he did know, and his teeth bared in a snarl.
The prophet would have our ears, you said.
The stubble-cheeked man stopped gaping at Saonid and licked his lips.
That was Harry's work, he protested. Harry's a mean one. He likes to keep count, take trophies, and he.
Shrugging in his captive coat, he sank in on himself like a cornered dog.
You can't tie that to me. The prophet'll hang you if you touch me. He's hanged nobles before, fine lords and ladies. I walk in the light of the blessed Lord Dragon.
Perrin walked stepper to the man, careful to keep the dun's hooves clear of the thing on the ground. He wanted nothing less than to have the fellow's scent in his nose, but he bent down, putting his face closer. Sour sweat warred with fear, panic, a tinge of anger. A pity he could not sniff out guilt. Might have dropped was not had dropped. Close-set eyes widened, and the man pressed back against Terrell's gelding. Yellow eyes had their uses.
"If I could tie that to you, you'd hang from the nearest tree," he growled.
The fellow blinked, began to brighten as he understood what that meant, but Perrin gave him no time to regain his bluster.
"I am Perrin Ibarra, and your precious Lord Dragon sent me here. You spread the word. He sent me, and if I find a man with trophies, he hangs. And if I find a man burning a farm, he hangs. If one of you looks at me cross-eyed, he hangs. And you can tell Massima I said so, too."
Disgusted, Perrin straightened.
"Let him go, Terrell. If he isn't out of my sight in two shakes..."
Terrell's hand opened, and the fellow dashed off at a dead run for the nearest trees, never so much as glancing back. Part of Perrin's disgust was for himself. Threatening. If one of them looked at him cross-eyed? But if the nameless man had not cut off ears himself, he had watched it and done nothing. Fael was smiling, pride shining through the sweat on her face. Her look washed away some of Perrin's revulsion. He would walk barefoot through fire for that look. Not everyone approved, of course. Seonid's eyes were squeezed shut, and her gloved fists quivered on her reins, as though she desperately wanted to yank that scarf from her mouth and tell him what she thought. He could guess, anyway. Edara and Navarin had gathered their shawls around them and were eyeing him darkly. Oh, yes, he could guess.
"I thought it was to be all secrecy," Terrell said casually, watching the stubble-cheeked man run. "I thought Massima wasn't to know you were here till you spoke in his pink ear."
That had been the plan. Rand had suggested it as a precaution. Seonid and Missouri had insisted on it every chance they got. After all, prophet of the Lord Dragon or no, Massima might not want to come face to face with someone Rand sent, considering the things he was said to have allowed. Those ears were not the worst, if the tenth part of rumor was to be believed. Edara and the other wise ones saw Massima as a possible enemy, to be ambushed before he could set his own trap.
"I'm supposed to stop that," Perrin said, gesturing angrily to the rawhide string on the ground.
He had heard the rumors and done nothing. Now he had seen.
"I might as well start now."
And if Massima decided he was an enemy, how many thousands followed the prophet, out of belief or fear? It did not matter.
"It stops, Terrell. It stops."
The Mirandian nodded slowly, eyeing Perrin as though seeing him for the first time.
"My lord Perrin," Megden said.
He had forgotten all about her and her friends. The others had gathered with her a little way off, most still afoot. There were three men aside from the fellow who had followed Megden, and two of those were hiding behind their horses. Linny appeared the wariest of all, eyes focused on him worriedly. She had her horse close to Megden's and seemed ready to seize the bridle herself. Not to stop the younger woman bolting, but to bolt herself and take Megden with her. Megden herself appeared completely at ease, but she also studied Perrin. Little wonder, after all that talk of the prophet and the dragon reborn on top of his eyes. Not to mention an Aes Sedai gagged. He expected her to say that they wanted to go now, immediately. But what she said instead was,
"We will accept your kind offer. A day or two resting in your camp might be just the thing."
"As you say, Mistress Magden," he said slowly.
Masking his surprise was difficult, especially since he had just recognized the two men trying to keep their horses between them and him.
Taveren work to bring them here?
A strange twist in any case. It might be just the thing at that.